This is Free Speech Radio News for Tuesday, April 2nd, 2013. In Los Angeles, I'm Dorian Marina. Coming up, competing plans to reduce gun violence move ahead, with the NRA promoting armed guards in schools and other groups pushing for expanded background checks and bans on certain ammunition. The hunger strike at the Guantanamo detention facility spreads as families in Kuwait and Yemen protest U.S. treatment of their loved ones. And we'll go to Russia, where the government's crackdown on human rights groups and NGOs continues. Those stories and more coming up.
I'm Nell Abram with FSRN Headlines. An Israeli teenager is back in jail today for the eighth time in the past 6 months. A military court sentenced Nathan Blanc to 14 days in jail today after he refused to serve in the military. All non-Arab citizens and permanent residents of Israel are required to serve when they turn 18. In a video statement, Blanc says he refuses because of what he calls the non-democratic civil inequalities between Israelis and Palestinians that he doesn't see an end to. Since November 2012, the Israeli military has ordered Blanc to report 8 times. Each time, he arrives at the recruitment center, he states his objection to service, and is jailed. Once released, the military calls him up again, and the cycle continues. Palestinians jailed across Israel are protesting today following the death of prisoner Misara Abu Hamdia. 3 days ago, Abu Hamdia, who suffered from esophageal cancer, was transferred to the hospital following claims of inadequate medical care in an Israeli jail. Demonstrators rallied in Hebron today, and a 3-day fast was called by other Palestinian detainees. 3 Palestinian prisoners remain on long-term hunger strikes. One of them, Samer Issawi, is reportedly near death. Earlier today, Britain's Chancellor of the Exchequer, or Finance Minister, defended changes to the UK's welfare system that took effect this week. Critics of the cuts include churches, charities, and advocacy groups. Roxanne Escobales reports from London.
In a speech to supermarket workers, George Osborne called criticism of the welfare reforms ill-informed rubbish and shrill headline-seeking nonsense. Osborne characterized the changes to the benefits system as fair to those currently employed while rewarding people who are trying to re-enter the job market. They would, he said, make the UK a competitive country for the future while helping to cut the deficit. The first of a series of reforms took effect yesterday. Housing benefits in both social and private housing are now capped, and people living in public housing will be penalized for spare bedrooms. The government estimates that 660,000 people will be affected, saving nearly $750 million in the first year alone. This weekend, a group of major churches attacked the government's reforms, saying they will punish the most vulnerable people. Housing charities have also hit back, saying that people in low-paid work, the unemployed, and the disabled will be pushed into homelessness. Roxanne Escobales, FSRN, London.
The United Nations overwhelmingly passed the first global treaty on arms today. Last week, 3 countries, Iran, Syria, and North Korea, blocked consensus on the deal. But in a vote at the General Assembly today, the resolution passed 154-3. With 23 nation states abstaining. The treaty calls for countries to adopt laws to control exports of arms ranging from light weapons to battleships, but stop short of banning such sales to non-state entities. Last month, the U.S. Senate opposed a similar symbolic treaty. White House Press Secretary Jay Carney said that while the U.S. did vote for the treaty, a full review is due prior to ratification.
As is the case with all treaties of this nature, we will follow normal procedures to conduct a thorough review of the treaty text to determine whether to sign the treaty.
The treaty also does not regulate imports or domestic gun sales. We'll have more on U.S. gun control measures later in the newscast. An Indiana University law professor is questioning the constitutionality of Indiana's so-called ag gag bill, a measure that would criminalize filming at factory farms and in slaughterhouses without permission. Supporters say the law would protect farmers from exploitation by activist groups. Indiana News Service Lee DeNoon has more.
Senate Bill 373 will be heard next on the floor of the Indiana House after passing a committee with a major amendment last Thursday. House sponsor Representative Bill Friend's amendment makes it a Class A misdemeanor to photograph at a farm or business without written permission from the owner. Indiana University law professor Seth Maughan believes the bill violates the First Amendment.
Whether you come at it from a position of food safety or working conditions or animal cruelty, it gets into a number of areas that I think the courts have always recognized and common sense tells you is an issue that the public has an interest in hearing about.
Lawn says there are already legal ways to get at prohibited conduct, charges of trespassing, fraud, and destruction of property. Friend's amendment also added a new crime to the bill, lying on a job application with the intent of harming a business. No public comment was allowed on the amendment before the bill passed out of the committee 9-3 on a party line vote. For Indiana News Service, I'm Lee Danoon.
India's Supreme Court fined UK-based Vedanta Mining Group almost $20 million today for environmental damages caused by its copper smelter in Tamil Nadu state. But the High Court also overturned a 2010 order that the plant be shut down. Despite the hefty fine, Vedanta stock went up today on the news. The plant did temporarily close last week after nearby residents reported breathing problems and complaints of a gas leak. For FSRN from Tampa, Florida, I'm Nell Abram.
I'm Dorian Marina in Los Angeles. In Washington, D.C., the National Rifle Association unveiled a plan today to funnel state and federal dollars toward providing armed guards in schools, reinforcing doors and windows, and installing more surveillance equipment on campuses. The move comes a day after Connecticut lawmakers announced a gun violence package that includes expanding background checks and the assault weapons ban, and as Congress prepares to continue its own work on gun control. In Washington, D.C., FSRN's Alice Olstein has more.
Former Congressmember and current NRA consultant Asa Hutchinson told reporters Tuesday that federal and state governments should quickly adopt his school safety proposal. Most of the more than 200-page plan is a call for guards with guns at every school. But Hutchinson said the strategy includes several layers that must all be present to be effective.
If you have a mental health component without having other security, it's inadequate. And if you have the armed presence there without having locking doors, it's inadequate, without having access controls. And so it's a comprehensive plan of layered security in which the armed school personnel, or SRO, is one element.
Hutchinson estimated that full implementation of the plan would cost schools between $800 and $1,000 per student. He also called on states that ban weapons from school campuses to repeal those laws. In a statement Tuesday, the American Civil Liberties Union condemned the call for further militarization of schools and the idea that the government supply weapons to educators. The country's largest teachers union, the American Federation of Teachers, also criticized the plan, saying it was more about selling guns and not keeping our communities safe from gun violence. When Congress returns from its spring recess next week, lawmakers will begin debating several gun safety proposals, including bills to strengthen background checks, ban certain types of weapons and ammunition, and increase penalties for gun traffickers. Maryland House Democrat Elijah Cummings told reporters in D.C. on Tuesday that he's been working for years on legislation that would sentence those convicted of straw purchases to a maximum of 20 years in prison.
Now, most Americans already think gun trafficking is a federal crime. I have news for you. It's not. They have no idea that there is no federal law targeting firearm traffickers who commonly use straw purchasers to buy guns for convicted felons and other dangerous criminals who cannot legally buy guns on their own.
Several Republican senators have already pledged to filibuster the package of gun safety bills when they come up for debate next week, even though the stronger proposals, including a renewal of the expired ban on assault weapons, were stripped out. Cummings, who has seen several gun control measures fail to win votes during his 17 years in Congress, said he's motivated to keep trying by the memory of losing his nephew to gun violence 2 years ago.
When you lose a family member like that, you just don't mourn them at their funeral. You mourn them every single day of your life. You mourn for the person that they could have been. And for children murdered at 5 and 6 years old, as they were at Sandy Hook, you mourn every missed birthday, every graduation, every Christmas, and that's right, every Easter. Every milestone missed is a reminder of the life they could have led had it not been so brutally and violently snatched away.
In Connecticut, some of the parents who lost children in the Sandy Hook shooting have been pushing for gun reform measures, and their state senators finally reached an agreement this week on the first gun control bill since the December massacre. The measure would force current owners of assault weapons and clips with more than 10 bullets to register them, implement universal background checks for all firearm sales, and extend the state's existing assault weapons ban to 100 new types of guns. Connecticut lawmakers are expected to vote on the bill Wednesday, and President Obama will deliver a speech in Hartford next week calling for similar measures to be enacted by the U.S. Congress. Alice Olstein, Free Speech Radio News, Washington.
The number of Guantanamo prisoners taking part in a nearly two-month-long hunger strike is on the rise, according to lawyers and the U.S. military. After initially denying the strike was taking place, the U.S. military said Monday that 39 men were refusing food, though prisoners describe it as more widespread. The government also said 11 prisoners were being force-fed, which requires inserting a tube into the person's nostrils or throat. The International Red Cross said in a statement that force-feeding violates international protections of prisoners. The Red Cross has sent a team to monitor the situation. On Monday, families of Yemeni detainees rallied outside the U.S. Embassy in Sana'a. In Kuwait, hundreds of protesters demanded the return of their nationals outside the U.S. Embassy over the weekend. Of the 166 prisoners that remain at Guantanamo, about half have been cleared for release. For an update on the hunger strike, we're joined by Lieutenant Colonel Barry Wingard, a military commission's attorney for several of the Guantanamo prisoners. Welcome to FSRN.
Good to be with you. Thank you.
You were at Guantanamo as recently as last week, meeting with your clients. Describe what they told you, what condition they were in.
Physically, my clients had lost a significant amount of weight. They had lost approximately one-third of their body weight. They were fearing having to go to the hospital any day. My clients reported to me that there were two-man teams that were also hunger striking that were going around trying to keep the men on their feet, and that the situation is growing more and more dire. In fact, I reported back in middle part of February that, in fact, there was a camp-wide hunger strike. Now, this would be the middle part of February when, of course, camp officials denied that there was any hunger strike. They then said that the hunger strike was limited to 6 people. They then said that it was Pakistani Taliban propaganda, which I don't understand. They then acknowledged that it was 7 people, 14 people, 21 people, 24 people, 25 people, 26 people, and today they're acknowledging 39 people. So I leave it to your listeners to assess who is actually giving the more realistic assessment of the situation. I'm telling you that this is a camp-wide hunger strike.
And as you're describing, those numbers are rising, even the numbers that the military is acknowledging. When you say camp-wide, do you mean the entire camp, or other attorneys have told us most of the camp known as Camp 6?
Well, no. It's my understanding that it is the vast majority of people. Now, I am not going to quibble over how many of the 166 it actually is, but it's a substantial majority of the people currently in Guantanamo Bay for 11 and a half years without charge. And it includes the 86 individuals who have been cleared for release for many years who also are continuing to be kept in a prison system offshore of the United States.
Well, let's talk specifically about your clients. One of them is Fayez Al-Kandari, a Kuwaiti. Does he face specific charges? Where does his case stand now?
Yeah, I can tell you that it stands absolutely nowhere. Fayez Al-Kandari was a Kuwaiti who went to Afghanistan to do charity work, just like Fawzi Al-Oda, the other Kuwaiti that's currently in Guantanamo Bay. They were rounded up and sold by the Northern Alliance to U.S. forces. Once they were sold, they were treated in enhanced ways for many, many years. I've reviewed their cases, and I can tell you, as a lawyer, I can tell you now that they will never receive a trial based upon the hearsay and complete lack of evidence in the case against them.
What about the review boards, the assessments the Obama administration was supposed to have set up in 2011? Is that an avenue? Is that a possibility for challenging your client's imprisonment?
Well, let me tell you, I see no movement in any way, shape, or form from this administration. The only thing that I've seen this administration do was close the office in the State Department that was supposed to close Guantanamo Bay. As far as any kind of judicial opportunity or opportunity to defend oneself, I've seen next to zero.
Also, your clients who are Kuwaiti brings up a slightly different dynamic. We've discussed on our program about the Yemeni detainees. Over about two-thirds of the detainees who have been cleared for release are Yemeni, and by an executive order, they're not permitted to return to Yemen. But in Kuwait did build a multi-million dollar rehabilitation center. What is that situation like with regards to the Kuwaiti government and the environment there?
Well, I can tell you this. The Emir of Kuwait, the highest ranking person in the country, essentially the king, has made a demand of the United States to return his two sons back to Kuwait. At the end of the Bush administration in 2008, the Americans demanded that the Kuwaitis build a rehabilitation center in order to get their sons back. The Kuwaitis dutifully went out and spent $40 million building the Al Salam Rehabilitation Center, which I've been to several times. I mean, it's a state-of-the-art facility that has a staff of people waiting for their first clients to come from Guantanamo Bay. So, as we said here today, the two Kuwaitis still remain in Guantanamo Bay. The rehabilitation center sits completely empty. There's 13,000 American soldiers in Kuwait, and Kuwait routinely buys billions of dollars in American military hardware. So,
and when was that rehabilitation center completed?
2009.
And it's empty today?
Completely empty.
Attorney Barry Wingard, you were alerting people in February about this hunger strike. We're now in April. You're scheduled to return again soon to Guantanamo to meet with your clients. How long can this go on? What kinds of risks do the hunger strikers face?
Well, my clients would tell you that the fact that they're breathing is mostly trivial. When they were indefinitely detained by President Obama in March of 2011, in each subsequent National Defense Authorization Act that he signed, they essentially died then. The fact that they continued to breathe is largely irrelevant. I mean, they're as dead can be. They just live in our offshore prison camp.
Lieutenant Colonel Barry Wingard is a military commissions attorney for several of the Guantanamo prisoners. He joined us to talk about the ongoing hunger strike taking place at Guantanamo. Barry Wingard, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
This is Eric Kovner, news director at KWVA 88.1 FM, the University of Oregon campus radio station. Free Speech Radio News is an investment in independent media that we've been making for nearly a decade. Find out how you can keep FSRN strong by visiting fsrn.org.
In Russia, government raids on human rights and other non-governmental organizations are drawing condemnation from the United States and the European Union. The raids are taking place amid a change in national laws to increase regulation of the groups. One NGO says government officials told them during a raid not to release a report about environmental and social problems connected with next year's Winter Olympics in Sochi. From St. Petersburg, FSRN's Ekaterina Danilova reports.
President Vladimir Putin says the federal prosecutor is obligated to carry out inspections on all organizations, including governmental organs. Speaking publicly about the race for the first time last Thursday, Putin said the aim in this case is to ensure the groups are not carrying out political activities financially supported from abroad without being registered as foreign agents.
You know that in these laws there is nothing prohibitive, no repressive sanctions. Simply everyone must ensure their activity is in accordance with the laws of the Russian Federation.
At the same time, the General Prosecutor's Office said the inspections are aimed at finding extremist organizations. Inspectors from several government authorities recently carried out a raid on the office of the group Environmental Watch on the North Caucasus near Sochi. Andrei Rodomacha is the group's director. He said that it was different from ordinary government inspections.
The goal of the inspection was to put pressure on us and to scare us. From the very beginning, there were violations. Only one inspector gave his name. The others didn't introduce themselves, who they are, what they are, and they didn't show any documents about the inspection, on what basis it's carried out, and what they were checking during the inspection.
Rodomacha said the inspectors asked about their plans to publish a report on the ecological consequences of the 2014 Winter Olympics in Sochi. The report was supported by a grant from the American Foundation, Global Green Grants Fund.
It's the worst Olympics in the history of the Olympic movement. It's the biggest in terms of environmental and human rights violations. Besides environmental violations, there have been mass relocation of people on completely false pretenses. They emphatically recommended that we not publish the report. In their opinion, it'll bring harm to the state.
Experts say no NGOs have so far registered as foreign agents. Rodomacha said his group doesn't need to register because they do not engage in political activity. The United States, France, Germany, and the European Union have all expressed their concern about the mass inspections of NGOs. Many of the NGOs raided receive funding from the United States and European countries. The head of the European Commission said the issue could complicate negotiations on a visa-free regime between Russia and the EU, which is a major demand of Russia in trade talks. Ekaterina Danilova, FSRN, St. Petersburg, Russia.
Tihar Jail in New Delhi is South Asia's largest prison. Among its more than 10,000 inmates are some of India's most notorious and high-profile prisoners. But recently, the prison has drawn attention for an unusual event. Behind its high walls, a group of prisoners produced what is perhaps the first commercial music album by prison inmates. Although it's being cited as a step forward in addressing poor prison conditions, serious reforms in the country's prison system are still lacking. FSRN's Bismillah Gilani reports.
At a music release party in New Delhi, the members of the rock band Flying Soul gather for a group photo with some local dignitaries. Holding copies of their debut album, they all look excited and confident. While it looks like a typical record launch event, this one is different. It's taking place inside South Asia's largest prison. The artists are all prisoners, while the organizers are the prison authorities. ''29-year-old Shivani Vasan is one of the singers. She has been in Tihar jail for 4 years. She is on trial for murder.
''It's all about destiny. Destiny takes people to unknown places. For me, it was Tihar. Maybe because God wanted to give me a chance to fulfill my childhood dream. I always wanted to become a singer. Even my parents wished the same for me. It somehow didn't happen outside, but now I'm living my dream here.
The album is titled Jaane Anjaane, or Known and Unknown. It includes 6 songs, all written and composed by the band members themselves. Love and separation are key themes. Other songs talk about what life is like behind bars. The album was recorded in a studio set up inside the jail. Amit Saxena is the lead singer. He has spent 9 years in jail on murder charges, but will soon be released.
We devoted all of our time to music because it offered an easy escape route. We live a very stressful life here, being away from home, missing our families. And on top of all this, the everyday problems with our cases is really difficult, and music gives us strength to cope with all this. And now it has also given us name and fame and changed our life in a way that I feel I'm already a star.
The band members are the finalists of the Tihar Idol competition, a talent hunt modeled on the lines of a popular TV reality show, The Indian Idol. More than 350 inmates were selected through auditions to compete for music, singing, acting, and dance categories. A local music company, Music One Records, volunteered to sponsor the program and train the inmates during the competition. Mukesh Raheja is the company's co-director.
The idea to do something like this was born out of an incident in the prison. Actually, there's a couple imprisoned here, the husband in one jail, the wife in another. The husband had sent a letter to his wife informing her of his decision to commit suicide and asking her to do the same. Luckily, the letter was intercepted and the prison authorities were anxious about such tendencies among the inmates. They discussed the issue with us and we all agreed that we need to keep them busy with something they can enjoy so that these kind of negative thoughts don't come to their mind.
The prison authorities insist that organizing such events is part of their ongoing agenda of prison reforms. Lokesh Chandra is superintendent of jail number 7 in Tihar.
In fact, the inmates suggested that we should hold something similar to the Indian Idol. We thought it was a great idea from the point of view of our reform policy. There were risks involved, but now we can say that it was a risk worth taking because it has transformed them completely. They have found a new person within themselves. It has made them aware of their creative side, and most of them are now focused on developing it further. Now they don't think about ways of committing crimes, but how they can unleash their creativity once they are out of jail.
Chandra also cites other majors as examples of what he calls innovative reforms the prison authorities have introduced over the years. They include study centers for those wishing to continue their education, industrial units for training in small-scale industries like weaving, carpentry, tailoring, and pottery, as well as meditation classes and spiritual workshops. But the real issues still remain unaddressed, says Yasin Patel, a former prisoner. Patel was recently acquitted of sedition charges and was released after a 2-year stay in Tihar.
I think the 27 months I spent in Tihar jail was the worst time of my life. Their treatment of prisoners is subhuman, to say the least. Reform is a big thing. The prisoners are not provided even the basic needs. It's the same colonial mindset of viewing prisoners as slaves, so the problems like substandard sanitation, low-grade and unhygienic food are common even now. Even the system of family visits that should have been a great solace has become a source of torture because of the procedure involved. So the first and foremost reform that is needed is in the attitude and behavior of the authorities, so that they realize that the people that they are dealing with are human beings.
Back at the music launch party, the inmates are sharing their experiences with the reporters covering the event. While the circumstances that landed these people behind bars may vary from case to case, there is one thing they all share in common: a strong urge to make a fresh start. Bismillah Gilani, Free Speech Radio News, New Delhi.
And that's the program for today. The newscast was produced by Catherine Kopp. Thanks for listening. In Los Angeles, I'm Dorian Marina.